I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. I'm here with Daniel Wroclawski, Associate Multimedia Content Creator at Consumer Reports. Welcome, Daniel. Thanks for coming on to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
So, Daniel, I read the piece that you recently wrote for Consumer Reports, which is titled, Four New Video Doorbells and Home Security Cameras Are Vulnerable to Hacking, where you shared that Consumer Reports tested 13 devices, and correct me if I'm wrong, but 13 devices and discovered 11 security vulnerabilities in four new video doorbells and home security cameras, potentially exposing their owners to hacking and leaks of personal data, which can include email addresses, Wi-Fi passwords. So I'd love to just start off our conversation by listening to you walk us through this test, what devices you tested, and what else you found.
Sure. We've been doing this for a few years now, where we conduct these what we call data privacy and data security tests. And it's all done by a team of really smart test engineers, much smarter than me, who evaluate these things. They look at all the documentation that most consumers never read, the privacy policies, the terms of service, any other legal documents that the company might provide. And they use that to basically figure out, what data are they collecting? What are they doing with it? Are they being vague about what they're doing with it? Are they being very clear about it? What kind of controls do you have over your data? All that sort of stuff. And then on the other side of that, they look at data security. So they'll look for certain security measures, things like using, encryption or multi-factor authentication. And they'll also look for security vulnerabilities. They'll actually do penetration testing on all of the cameras and doorbells. And so we tend to operate in batches. We'll do, in this case, 13 models at a time. And it's always a mix. It's usually whatever's the newest sort of stuff on the market. We looked at models from very popular brands like Arlo and Blink and Logitech and Ring. And we also look at some lesser known brands that are usually more affordable, which of course consumers like, but also often tend to have worse security and sometimes privacy. In this case, we found 11 security vulnerabilities, as you mentioned, across four different models. It were two from a small startup called Bosma, one Bosma Sentry video doorbell and the Bosma X1 security camera. And then we found vulnerabilities in two other video doorbells, one made by a startup called Eufy and another from a small company called Nui. On the one hand, it's good that we didn't find any vulnerabilities in big name products, and that's what most people tend to buy. So that's a good thing. But people are still drawn to these lesser known products because they tend to be much more affordable. And so, in this case, this is a problem and we want to make consumers aware. We also do make the manufacturers aware. We disclose the vulnerabilities way before I ever write about them to the manufacturers, and we try to work with them to get them fixed.
Oh, that's great. And I think that, like bug bounty, things like that, I hear about, there's kind of two camps of people who are very pro that and people who are very against it because they feel like it doesn't give the company the opportunity to remedy whatever the vulnerability is that's found. But that's awesome that you guys disclose when you find, so they do have that time, so that when it comes out and people are like if it was Ring or whomever and people are freaking out, I have that one, oh no, like, rest assured, this has been remedied. But I also think that it's good to raise awareness just at what people are installing in their homes, right? Because we're very open and receptive to this type of new technology because of what it affords us, but we kind of forget that there are vulnerabilities and there that can include being open to hacking. And so as far as these vulnerabilities that were found and, how would someone who has bad intentions, bad actors, whatever, how could they exploit these vulnerabilities and devices to use against folks?
So if they were to, exploit them, they could, this particular instance doesn't look like hackers would get access to the actual camera feeds. That's really a key and important thing to know. We have had cases in the past of that. And, that's a scary thing, especially if you're using a camera inside your home the home is a very personal and private space, and you don't want strangers being able to see you. But in these particular instances, it's really more about personal data. So whether if they were to exploit them, they could get, you know, your email address or your home Wi-Fi password. There were a few other bits of data as well. And, you know, that could then be used against you in a number of different ways. You know, using your email address, they could then, you know, try to do phishing attacks or other sorts of things against you. You know, look up your email address in different leaked account password databases and then try to hack your accounts that way. So there are definite issues that can sort of snowball from this data being hacked.
My next question for you was, how does Consumer Reports test privacy and data security? I feel like you covered that in your first response, but to build on that further, what are other types of smart home devices or security products that Consumer Reports tests and reports on and works with companies on, et cetera?
I can expand a little bit more on the testing. So we actually test to something we call the digital standard, which is this framework that Consumer Reports and a number of other organizations created specifically for testing privacy and security of products and services. And so in addition to cameras and doorbells, we use that on a whole range of things. We've looked at Wi-Fi router systems, we've looked at robotic vacuums, we've looked at different services, things like we did one time mobile peer-to-peer payment services, so things like Venmo or Apple Pay. And it's great because it is designed in such a way that it is very adaptable to different things. We're always looking at bringing it to more and more products, because I mean, we're just living in this world now where more and more products have connectivity. You know, right now I'm looking at connected home appliances, you know, refrigerators and washing machines and dishwashers. And those are all things that we have these ingrained expectations on, that of how they behave and how they act, and connectivity sort of throws those expectations out the window. So yeah, we're always looking at bringing it to more things, home appliances, as I just said, in particular, but the sky's the limit, really.
Do you think that people are, and people being just like general consumers, do you think that they're really interested? Is that like a hot topic right now, like home appliances, smart home devices, IoT, like things like that? Or is it more like you think that this is what people should know since they're purchasing so many of them?
It's a bit of both. I find personally, it really depends on what the product is. So if it's something that has a camera in it, I feel like people are much more concerned about that. Whereas if it's something such as a washing machine, it's sort of twofold. One, they're not as concerned because they're like, well, what's my washing machine going to figure out about me? But it's also, they just aren't really aware that these newer products have this functionality. And so, you know, on one hand, them not knowing is a good thing because they often won't connect the product and then they don't have to worry about their privacy and security. But if they do, they are potentially opening themselves up to a sort of Pandora's box situation. It's definitely a bit of both. We do tend to find a lot of people don't care as much, which is a little disheartening, but it does seem like the tides are turning as people sort of become more and more aware of what companies can do with all this data. As that picture sort of becomes clearer, I think people will care more.
As far as you just mentioned, like what companies will do with data, is it fair to say that the companies, you know, whomever creates this, if it's a fridge, KitchenAid, you know, Whirlpool, whoever, are they collecting data on those devices? And if so, are they collecting anything to like help improve consumer experience? Or like, how does that, do you know about like the back end, like intentions there? I guess I've never really thought of that before.
Every manufacturer, regardless of what it is, whether it's a security camera or a refrigerator or a car, they all say they're collecting the data to improve the product. And I'm sure that's true to a certain degree, but at the same time, they are also potentially selling that data to advertising agencies or these data collection firms. So there certainly are good intentions, but then there are also, at least from a consumer perspective, not so great intentions.
Do we as consumers, when we buy that product? Are we consenting to that? I guess, how does that consent work? Like, maybe I'm okay with, just like anything, you know, are you okay with this, but maybe not that? And you consent to this one, but not that one. Is it just purchasing that they kind of get that? It's like a loophole, or am I not understanding something?
You know, consent is a weird thing when it comes to these products. For example, I just recently tried out Google's latest video doorbell, which we haven't put through these tests yet, but we plan to in the future. But one thing that I found really surprising is that they make you agree to an arbitration agreement in order to use the doorbell. And so that means, you know, you can't sue Google or take part in any class action lawsuits against them for any issues that may arise from using the doorbell. And Google is actually one of the better players in this regard, because they actually tell you that you have to agree to this, whereas other brands such as Arlo and Ring won't. They have these arbitration agreements, but don't tell you about them. Just by using the product, you are agreeing to them. And if they allow you to opt out, which not all brands do, but if they do, you usually only have 30 days to do so. But you have no idea that you agreed to this thing, and you have this limited amount of time to stop it. That's a big problem in and of itself. But then you also, you know, you will at least usually be presented with the privacy policies in terms of service, which you can disagree to, but often that means you won't be able to use the product. And frankly, most people don't read those terms or those policies and actually understand what's being done with all their data. So yeah, it's really kind of a mess. I feel like consumers don't really have, at least right now with the way, you know, laws around these things work, don't have the power to really actually say yes or no to these things. It's really just whether or not you are willing to open yourself up to that risk and use the product for whatever the reward might be in your perspective.
Yeah, because it's been my experience that if you say, you know, no, you do lose it's a limited functionality, or like you're saying, maybe you can't even really use the product. And so it's not really enabling you to decline, right? Because it's like you're at their mercy. I mean, you already bought this thing. I guess you could return it, but you know, you bought it for an intended purpose, and now you can't fully get the rewards of that intended purpose.
Yeah, it's really a big problem. And I mean, and you know, we're kind of getting to a point, it's like, what are you going to do? Just, you know, ignore technology entirely? Like, you're going to, you know, miss out on opportunities and solutions that could really help you. But there is this trade-off that, unfortunately, you know, it's difficult to tell who's getting the better bargain.
So is your hope in what you do and the things that you do to help maybe obviously raise awareness of these issues so that they can be remedied, but then also to perhaps be a, I don't know if change agent is the right word or term, but is it to help maybe kind of, I mean, you're for the consumer, right? Consumer Reports. So to try to advocate for them in that way?
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't personally do the advocating, but we actually do, not everyone is aware of this, but Consumer Reports does have a whole advocacy division in DC, whose their whole job is advocating for consumer rights in law. So they will, you know, endorse certain bills in Congress and in state houses around the country, and you know, present model legislation, all that sort of stuff, to try to give consumers these rights and make things better for them.
That's awesome. I didn't know that, but I'm glad that I asked.
Yeah, it's a really neat thing that that few people are aware of, I think.
To wrap up, any final recommendations for folks listening on how to stay safe or just kind of be on top of their rights as consumers or what have you?
For one, if you're looking for these products, sort of shameless plug, but you can always, you know, check out consumerreports.org. We've rated hundreds to thousands of different products. And, you know, when it comes to cameras and doorbells, we've got over 70 that we've looked at in our ratings. And these are all ones that are available on the market. You can buy today. In terms of better protecting yourself, I would say make sure you're just really thoughtful about which products you do buy. Make sure to use, you know, common security features like multi-factor authentication. You know, if you are buying cameras, I'd really refrain from putting them inside your house unless you're only going to put them in like common areas or like a living room or an area that you're okay with sort of being more public, if you will. But really, I'm a big proponent of just putting them on the outside of your home if you really want them. And yeah, just, you know, really be thoughtful and try to remember that if you can listen and see whatever's happening, odds are someone else very likely could be able to. And yeah, just be thoughtful about it.
Excellent. Well, Daniel, thank you so much for coming onto the show and joining us today. I think this is a really great conversation that our listeners will really enjoy and appreciate. So thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. Joining us today was Daniel Roklowski, Associate Multimedia Content Creator at Consumer Reports. And you can listen to all of our podcast episodes, and especially more like this, at cybercrime.radio.